The royal edict was proclaimed near and far. The young prince, who would soon ascend to the throne, was seeking a suitable princess, and all of the noble families of the kingdom must escort their eligible daughters to the court, for from among them the future queen would be chosen. It said that 2,000 high-born young ladies were brought before the prince, but he was attracted to only one. Others had come from nobler families. Others might have made a more politically advantageous marriage, and yet for the young prince there was an even higher consideration. He had fallen in love. I don't know, this sounds like a fairy tale, and yet it happened just that way once upon a time, more than 400 years ago. And this was the beginning of a real-life love story which history almost forgot. In 1547, the young prince was crowned king, and shortly thereafter, he made the girl of his dreams his queen, and I know of no royal romance quite like this one, for the benevolence of this young monarch's reign was directly reflective of his profoundly affectionate marital relationship. It was as though the youthful king and queen, as a result of their devotion to each other, set out to transform their country into a kingdom of love. And thus began a new era in that nation's history, one in which the king was regarded as a father to his subjects, in which those subjects were restored to equanimity. A traveler in that land once wrote home, "I think no prince in Christendom is better beloved." And surely that was so. In the government's highest council, members were free to express any opinion, no matter how contrary to the king's. For the first time ever in that nation, its poorest citizen had access through petition to its leader. In fact, the king became a particular friend of the poor, a humanitarian devoted to charity and to the relief of suffering everywhere. The king proved to be a godly man, a builder of churches, a humble ruler who fasted and prayed, a monarch who believed that the men in his government should be good men, that the children of his kingdom should be set early upon the paths of righteousness, and to all things which were good, the queen encouraged her king. It was her tenderness which had tamed the raucous boy and urged him into a manhood of dignity. It was her virtue which had inspired his godliness, her benevolence, understanding, which had served as moral examples for the wisest leader that nation had ever followed. And in turn, he, the king, loved her, his queen, as few men who have ever lived have ever loved. Then one day the queen fell ill. The king frantically summoned his finest medical advisors. The king wept. The king prayed. The queen died. And the king changed. The fairy tale was finished, and the nightmare was beginning. For once upon a time, there was a king who threw himself into a life of dissipation, drunken revelry, who seized those who had been his friends and tortured them and impaled them on stakes and burned them alive, a sadistic beast of a man who murdered children, even his own children. History almost forgot the saint that he had been, remembering instead the demon he became. For after 13 years of glory and goodness, that nation's most benevolent ruler became its most evil. And don't let it be forgot that the kingdom bathed in blood was once wrapped in dreams, and that the king, more than a king, the czar of all Russia, with his bride by his side, was Ivan the Wonderful. When she, Anastasia, was gone, when the light in the Tsar's heart was extinguished forever, the fiend that remained was Ivan the Terrible. Now you know. the rest of the story.